present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome once again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Situations Vacant column of the Southern Cross, read by Charlotte Green.
Small, centrally located B&B, conscious person required for various duties.
Well, thank you, Mark Russell of Shoreham, for sending us that. Now let's meet the team. So we do welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Jane Thim. Facing them, on my left, Andy Hamilton and Steve Punt. Before we start round one, here's a piece of city news from Reuters.
Cocoa weak as speculators liquidate.
Well, thanks to Ruth Stanton of London for that. Francis, your question is this. Who's taxing time was all lies?
It's the Labour Party political broadcast, which went out a certain number of days ago, depending on whether you're listening to the repeat or the first broadcast. And they said that John Major was a liar. They said it about 20 times in 5 seconds. And Jeremy Hanley, the chairman of the Conservative Party, got terrifically upset and said that John Major doesn't lie as often as that about tax, but maybe about other things. But anyway, he hasn't sued for libel, though I noticed the BBC has now asked to be indemnified for any libel suits arising from party political broadcasts in case the Tories strike back, or in case the Labour broadcasts turn into News of the World type ones, and every Labour Party political broadcast they unmask another Tory backbencher who's had a three in a bed romp while raising taxes simultaneously.
This was the Labour Party's political broadcast that accused Mr. John Major of lying about taxation at the last election. The film included grainy freeze-frame shots of the Prime Minister promising tax cuts, but if you look very closely, you can see the shadowy figure of Kenneth Clark on a grassy knoll with his fingers crossed. Tory Party Chairman Jeremy Hanley hit back on council tax, saying that Conservatives were much cheaper than Labour. So much cheaper, in fact, that people have been buying Conservatives by the dozen. Jane, what class war might be Shepherd's warning?
Ah, this is the teaching profession you can't have avoided this week. The teachers are protesting against this English custom of battery teaching, where you cram as many pupils as possible into a small space. And the government says it's fine because they've all got 6 inches of perching desk space. But the teachers are normally mild-mannered people who feel that it's absolutely wrong, and so they're protesting.
They say Education Secretary Gillian Shepherd doesn't understand problems in schools and threatened her with industrial action. Teaching groups of children over 30 is becoming impossible, but Mrs. Shepherd says that if they've still got kids over 30 in school, they can't be doing their jobs properly. There was inevitably one problem with their voting system. Every time they asked for a show of hands, half the delegates were excused to go to the toilet. Steve, nice to have you back on the programme. Which numbers were called up by one?
This must be Phone Day, which was widely trailed, and sadly, now we won't see any more of those adverts. What I particularly liked about them was that they had two versions of Michael Aspel. I don't know if you noticed that, but on all the serious ones with the World Cup or the Apollo landing, Michael Aspel went, "It's one to remember." But on the one with Tony Hancock and Morecambe Wise, he went, "It's one to remember," which was subtle, I thought. This was Phone Day, where Telecom added an extra digit to everything. Their chairman's salary, for example, and operating profits for this year. And the person who came out of it worst was this strange chap who had, rather unfortunately, he'd been planning an attempt on the world record for memorising the most phone numbers in the summer, and he'd learnt 15,000 phone numbers, and now he's got to learn them all again because he's learnt them all wrong. I just particularly admire anyone who bothers to learn 15,000 phone numbers because they're either clinically mad or they were seriously annoyed at being charged for directory inquiries. It's, it's one of the two.
Anyway, Andy, here's a piece of music for you.
He spoke of brothers many, wine and women, song of plenty. He began to write a chapter in his story. Nice and sleazy, nice and sleazy does it.
That was Nice and Sleazy by the Stranglers. Not a pop group by the sound of they are actually Stranglers. Your question is, who can we say without fear or opposition is nice but not sleazy?
I believe that there was one of these polls. Am I barking up an appropriate tree? Which about Who do you trust?
Slightly more personal than that.
Sleazier than that.
It is sleazier than that.
Think real sleaze.
Oh, I'm upset isn't real now. I've got images of Geoffrey Archer flashing through my mind.
It's Tony Blair, isn't it? It's the Labour Party's attempt at sleaze. It's the best that the Labour Party could come up with after all the Tories threw in a bed sex romps is one night in the Glen Eagles Hotel, which they discovered that Tony Blair in kind of 1979 spent with his wife Cherie. And the most exciting thing about the stay was a seminar on Labour Party policy. And I really think they're going to have to do better in the sleaze wars.
Yeah.
No, but apparently he did steal the shower cap. Which,
and he also rang his mum and didn't... And didn't get billed
saying...
for it. I think sooner or later, though, that Tony Blair will realise that actually sleeping with his wife is a bad political move. And then I'm sure he'll be advised on that soon.
Okay. It's all about Blair, who had vicious accusations of sleaze levelled at him. Tory MP David Shaw accused Labour's leader of taking a free Concorde trip and John Prescott of staying free in the Glen Eagles Hotel. Mr. Blair explained his Concorde trip to America came free from the Conoco petrol company, which seems quite generous. I only get a set of tumblers from Shell. The scores at the end of round one are quite interesting, because it's the first time that they've ever happened quite like this, because Andy and Steve have got 2, but Francis and Jane have got 5. The early leaders. We start round 2 with a cutting from the Sunday Mail.
A ceremony to mark the 200th anniversary of a wooden bridge in Montreux, Switzerland, ended abruptly when it collapsed, throwing onlookers into the river.
Well, thank you, Beatrice Donnelly of Glasgow, for sending us that cutting. Francis, your question again. What is it about them kids what ain't proper?
Oh, he can't speak proper.
That's right.
It's their English. This is Gillian Shepherd's education policy. After all these years of conservative education policy, she's discovered that children can't do subjects and verbs very well, and the objects let them down. And gerunds and gerundives, on the other hand, they're rather good at, but they never get asked to do those. I think it's something to do with that, isn't it?
What's he talking about?
No, it is. I think you'll find.
They choose not to speak proper English. In fact, they do know the correct version. It's just that they see these researchers coming round from the Department of Education and they choose to wind them up by...
This is the news that the standard of English spoken in schools today is deplorable. Pupils regularly say things like, I ain't, and of course it should be, we ain't. And them books what we got. It obviously should be, them books what we ain't got. Jane, which speaker wasn't a stick in the mud?
This is a very peculiar story, isn't it? And I don't think I quite believe it. It's about Betty Boothroyd, isn't it?
It is indeed.
I think it's Labour's attempt to kind of counter the Jonathan Aitken Arab connection. We've now got Betty Boothroyd going to Marrakesh on the hippie trail. Don't ask me why, but the most bizarre thing about it is her car got caught in a landslide and she was dug out and rescued by the Moroccan police force. And they said, we know exactly who you are because we recognise you from World Service Television. But what is the Moroccan police force doing watching Today in Parliament on World Service Television? It just doesn't ring true to me.
Everyone seemed to think she was terrifically heroic and was amazed by her fortitude, you know, walking through mud and slime for all these hours. Which, given that she has to chair Prime Minister's questions twice this week, you'd think would be a doddle. But everyone thinks she's been very brave, as I'm sure she has.
But also, she is a Labour member, isn't she? And she wasn't expecting to get caught in a landslide for another 2 years. So.
And this is all about Betty Boothroyd, who was trapped in a mudslide in Morocco, but still wasn't late back at the Commons after the Easter break. Many MPs can hardly get out of bed in time to get to the Commons. Mind you, most of them can hardly get out of bed in time to get home. Miss Boothroyd has been touring the High Atlas Mountains in a Land Rover when heavy rains caused a landslide. Because the local police recognised her from TV, as you so rightly say, Jane, they sent out a bulldozer to move the great wobbly heap. No, I didn't mean that at all. Steve, here's a piece of music for you.
I get no kick from champagne. Near alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. So tell me, why should it be true that I get a kick
This is a real brain teaser, this one, because the question is, who kicked off his penalty with community service conflit?
Yes, well, this would be one man entente cordiale, Eric Cantona, who was showing youngsters his immense footballing skills this week, how to deal with the penalty, which is get it reduced to a less severe penalty. There is a great Eric Cantona joke going around, which what's the similarity between Eric Cantona and Camilla Parker Bowles? They both got a leg over at the Palace. Yes, it's Eric Cantona who's coaching youngsters how to play football and also showing them his new training video, Karate Kid 4, I think.
I think it's a disgrace, the sentence that he got. It was far too late. First of all, I never understood the fact that one of the mitigating factors was that he'd been subjected to racialist abuse. Now, since when has calling someone a French git constituted racial abuse? That's the first thing. The second thing is, I think the punishment should have been penalised his Frenchness. And I think that he should have been forced to 10 weeks of eating overcooked vegetables or something like that. I think it's a disgrace. And if you are listening, my name is Steve Punt.
This is disgraced Manchester United player Eric Cantona, who started his community service this week coaching schoolboy footballers. Eric started by instructing the youngsters in the art of defence when under pressure, which was deny everything, and if that fails, get a better lawyer for the appeal. Andy, who saw red about white when the punters were in the pink?
There was a snooker game involving Jimmy White and a man with a funny name that ends in O, and it was 2-2 at the lunch break. And then he went to pieces in the way that snooker players often do, and the commentator says, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Couldn't play a shot right, played with the wrong end of the cue, ripped the base, fell over backwards trying to play a shot, and he lost 10-2, which was fair enough. Except that, funnily enough, an awful lot of people had placed a bet on him losing 10-2, and a lot of the bets had been placed by Bruce Grobbelaar, apparently. So anyway, so the snooker governing body, off snook, or whatever they're called, have decided that Jimmy White is definitely innocent, which is fair enough, because he probably just thought this bloke was having a bad day, and I believe that it's still under investigation.
These are allegations of irregular betting on a snooker match, you're quite right. Large amounts were placed on Jimmy White beating Peter Francisco by 10-2, which he did. In fact, it was all over by 1:30. And the scores at the end of round two are Andy and Steve 6, but Francis and Jane still in the lead with 9. We start round three with a cutting from Esquire.
Dave Snook stole 30 gnomes from a garden centre after he'd been drinking and took them home to watch the World Cup final. When police called at his home, they found the gnomes arranged around the television set. Some had cigarettes in their mouths, and one was fishing from a goldfish bowl. Snook said he took them because they looked lonely.
Thank you, Gavin Warnes of Northwood, for that. Francis, it's you again. Who was railing against government barriers to tourism?
I think this is those dreadful Thatcher gates in Downing Street.
That is quite right.
Which are going to be torn down come the revolution because they're frightening tourists away. Tourists want to go into Downing Street to see John Major, I suppose. Can't imagine why, but they've heard that he's worth a look. So, and they get there and they find there are these huge barricades. And the British Tourist Authority or some such body has begged the government to remove them and also to let people wander freely around Whitehall in and out of the Foreign Office and the Home Office and so forth to see if they can find any ministers at work.
This is the Joint National Heritage and Environment Department report that calls for the gates to be taken off Downing Street as it's London's top tourist attraction. The 15-foot iron security gates with spikes and barbed wire were erected when Mrs. Thatcher was in office, but she still kept getting out. Another site that should be open to the public is the Treasury, where tourists could witness the Chancellor making decisions that affect the economy for years to come, and even to see the actual penny he tosses for heads or tails. Also of particular interest are Henry VIII's tennis courts next to Whitehall that were closed in the 16th century just after the last Englishman got through to the finals. Jane, here's a piece of music for you now.
Camelot, Camelot, I know it gives a person pause, but in Camelot, Camelot, those are the legal laws.
Well, that was, of course, Richard Harris singing Camelot. And your question is, who lost his shirt on the lottery?
I think this is the sad tale of yet another fall of a small business, isn't it? It's this man who had a very good idea of getting the extremely irritating, smiley little National Lottery logo and uncrossing its fingers and making a slightly ruder gesture with it and printing it on lots of T-shirts and trying to sell them. And Camelot stepped in and attempted to ban this, or said that they would ban it, and he had to burn the T-shirts. But he then accused Camelot of not having a sense of humour, which, considering they've managed to run a game in which they persuaded everybody to bet on a 14 million to 1 chance and take £100 million a week, I think they've got a great sense of humour.
This refers to Steve Lawrence, who was ordered to burn 500 T-shirts by Camelot, the National Lottery organisers. They were printed with a hand similar to the lottery ads, but with one finger raised straight up. Underneath were the words, "I've won bugger all." Camelot argued the public would be confused by the shirts. And they're right. Most people thought he was advertising the Reader's Digest prize draw. Steve, who has a kernel of an idea about female equality?
Oh, yes. This is about Colonel Gaddafi, isn't it?
It is
a bit of an odd story. He's come out as a bit of a liberal. He's sort of been parading his liberal credentials. He's voted for legalisation of cannabis and told his bodyguards to go back to their constituencies and prepare for government. And he's basically said that women have a great time in Libya, and he's got an all-female bodyguard. He's got 40 tank girls around him. And that it's Libya's basically a fun place to party, as long as you're not a political party, obviously. I think that's what it is.
I think that does it awfully well. This is Colonel Gaddafi, the Libyan leader and Fatima Whitbread impressionist. Who proclaimed himself the guide for all humanity and said his women are a role model for the world. And if his women can become a military officer, a brain surgeon, or learn to fly a MiG fighter, just so long as his dinner's on the table when he gets home from the Revolutionary Congress. Andy, who was penalised for stealing foreign fixtures?
This is the story, I believe, of Middlesbrough Football Club.
It is.
Who have been building the new stadium, and they use German steel. And there's a big steelworks up the road, probably the last one in England. Probably going to be a theme park soon or something like that. And the local burghers are outraged, and I think Middlesbrough's attitude is that they've sort of told them to take a hike, I think.
No, it's Middlesbrough's sponsors who told them to take a hike, because they're sponsored by British Steel.
Oh, is that right?
Who had this large shop up the road and were waiting for custom and discovered that their very own team had gone off to Germany rather than...
That's a bit of a PR
sponsors.
Own goal by Middlesbrough, then, isn't it? Do you think after they'd sort of placed the order with, you know, Scharnhorst Steel, they thought, I wonder if British Steel will be offended by this. Do you think they'll want the names off the shirts?
I don't think it occurred to them that British Steel actually might make steel. I think they thought it was already a theme park.
This is Middlesbrough Football Club, who've lost sponsorship from British Steel. Their new expanded stadium is being built from German steel, which is much cheaper. British Steel at Redcar were quite critical of Middlesbrough FC, as they like to be known, because most people think they called Middlesbrough nil. Contractors Taylor Woodrow rushed to the team's defence, who immediately brought them down just outside the penalty area. And the score's at the end of the third round. Andy and Steve have 10, but Francis and Jane are still in the lead with 14. Now, before we start the final round, here's an item spotted in the Daily Telegraph.
TV sports pundit Joe Theismann, commenting on the retirement of San Francisco quarterback Joe Montana, said, "We should be careful about using the word genius to describe a football player. A genius is a guy like Norman Einstein."
Good. good old norm. This theory of relativity. Thank you, Anne Curran of Hertfordshire, for that. Francis, will you have a listen to this?
Let me take you down, cause I'm going.
That was surprisingly the King Singers singing Strawberry Fields Forever. Can't help but feel it was a mistake. Anyway, your question is, what fruity problems didn't shape up?
I think this is part of our continuing war with the Spanish. Having taken them on the fish front, we're now tackling them on the soft fruit battlefield, because we imported, or a greengrocer imported, a lot of strawberries from Spain. A Ministry of Agriculture inspectors came round to look at them, suspiciously to check that they weren't halibut in disguise. And they couldn't get them for being too small, which is what they do with the Spanish fish. So they said, oh, it's the wrong shape for strawberry, because it's cube, and you can't eat a cuboid strawberry. So they've been sent back to Spain. But the poor old greengrocers have got to pay an enormous fine to the government for daring to import square strawberries. It's a criminal offence, apparently.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Do you think this is because they've been grown under Spanish nets with their famously irregular-shaped holes?
It's all about Eddie Greaves and his square strawberries. Apparently they've been packed far too tightly to comply with fruit shipment regulations, although he could have got round it by reclassifying the fruit as livestock. Jane, whose trial run on the road proved twice the limit?
I have to say, if it's not about sleaze or strawberries, then...
It's about motorbikes,
pass
probably.
Me by.
Well, it's just that this chap went at 155, I think he was clocked at, thereabouts, miles an hour on the motorway, stopped on the M40 by the police. Well, eventually, I mean, they first spotted him somewhere near Edinburgh, I think, but they... by about Oxford, they'd got the measure of him and pulled him in, and he told them that he was actually slowing down at the moment when they registered him doing 155, because he was very proud of this bike, he'd only just bought it, and he said, you know, it can do 180. So he's been fined, and he's going to have to sell the bike to pay the fine. Serve him right, ho-ho. Terribly sad story.
It is a sad story, really, but in a way it's salutary. This refers to motorbike fanatic Stephen Gregory, who was banned for doing 154 miles an hour on his Honda on the M40. He was stopped by Northamptonshire Traffic Police in their specially equipped Vauxhall Concorde. Stephen said he had no excuse and described himself as a born-again motorcyclist, which is a handy trick to know if you plan to drive around at 154 on public roads. Steve, what Game Boys struck it rich with their donkey?
Yes, I don't know their names, but this is two sort of computer whiz kid chaps who designed software for Nintendo. They did Donkey Kong. Nintendo also do Super Mario Brothers, who, of course, they're plumbers. And they've designed a special British version where they're more like British plumbers. And you press the button and 6 hours later they come onto the screen and charge you more points than they've actually done work for. They designed Donkey Kong Country, where Donkey Kong and Diddy Kong run
what
around.
What is all this Donkey Kong? What sort of
Donkey
name is
Donkey Kong
that?
Is a sort of computer graphic gorilla.
Oh, I see.
Designed by the same man who designed the square strawberry, probably. And he goes around chasing bananas, and it's made them £10 million.
Are we jealous? No.
Certainly not.
Certainly no. Not.
We don't care, do we?
No. I hope they're happy.
I probably win the bloody lottery next week. Andy, what's hoped will be top of the poppadoms?
Do you mind if we stop the recording for a second while me and Steve nip out and place a bet that we're going to lose this game? Is that all right?
I put the bet down before we went into the recording.
Oh, right.
But I'm
It's about a man who's releasing a record with loads of sort of puns on Indian meals. Oh, see this look in my eyes, Steve? That's a cry for help.
If you go for a curry, you always notice that there's always the same music on in the restaurant.
Ah.
But what someone's done is that people have such happy memories of their experience with the curry that they want to take that music home and listen to it at home with their sort of cheaper Findus boil-in-the-bag version. And so someone, some fine, upstanding entrepreneur, has released a tape of greatest curry house hits. and it's It's a tape with all those bits of music that go boing on it.
We had this last week, didn't we? Because last week we had Fergie sitting in McDonald's, decided she wanted a copy of the tape music. Mm. Is this going to be a dreadful fad now? People going around supermarkets and stopping off the tills saying, can I have a copy of that music? Do they sell you the flop wallpaper as well?
This is Music for Dining, a CD of Indian restaurant background tunes, specially released to go with takeaway meals. It comes in a silver box set, which for added realism allows the CDs to spill out onto the floor of your car. It's produced by Andrew Lug Oldham, who used to produce the Rolling Stones back in the 60s. I'm sorry, back in their 60s. Well, before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the team have brought along. Francis, have you brought a cutting for us?
Yes, Barry. This is from the Times.
Oh, nice.
And it's a story from Brooklyn Heights, Ohio. A man arrested for speeding and other motoring offences was changing into prison uniform when his pet boa constrictor popped out of his boxer shorts. He told police he was trying to keep the snake warm and was later released on bail.
That's his story. Well done, Jane.
This comes from the Portsmouth Journal series. Oh. It's during a hearing of a case of indecency, a court in Belgium was told that before prescribing contact lenses, an optician ordered women to strip naked and dance round his consulting room while he played the accordion. His lawyer explained that the defendant had qualified in England, where this technique was commonplace.
Steve?
Well, I like this one, which is from a High Wycombe paper. High Wycombe, famed for its furniture manufacturing. This is an advert for a bed shop, and it says, special offer for you romantics. Chunky pine, four-poster beds. Choice of stains. But that's probably a bit horrible, so we'll have to go with this one from the Birmingham Post, which is a remand prisoner strolled out of a police station when officers took a break from questioning him. He'd been kept in a cell during the day, but in the evening found an open door and walked free. A spokesman for West Mercia Police said, I cannot say which door he left by, because that would compromise our security.
Well done, Steve. Andy?
I mean, this is to Mr. Piercy of Laverton near Ripon, who sent this in. It's an interesting insight into the mentality of British Rail. Eastern Cross Country said it could not afford the £7.5 million for extra trains on the Portsmouth to Cardiff line. A survey conducted on a Friday found that 28 of 164 passengers had to stand. Manager Chris Gibbs said, because of the worsening problem, I will have to seek additional ways of suppressing demand for these trains.
Right. Well, thank you all. Let's look at the final scores. And they've remained fairly constant all the way through the competition because Andy and Steve have got 14, but Francis and Jane have won this week with 18. Well done. Before we leave you, here's a cutting sent in by Kate Britton of Sevenoaks.
Amanda Day, 28, named her newborn son Alfie Sean Zippity-Doo-Dah Day. At first, I was going to call him Sonny, she said, but Sonny Day is just too stupid.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Andy Hamilton, Jane Finn and Steve Punt. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson. The producer was Aled Evans.